On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, we're talking Jalen Brunson's ankle injury last night. Who do we see becoming a playoff destroyer in the spring? And what are the biggest playoff flaws for the Eastern Conference contenders? All that and producer John talking about LeBron on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this podcast. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. Since it is Wednesday, it is me and producer John. Producer John always has these great ideas. Because it's the trade deadline, and the trade deadline is less than 24 hours away at the time of this recording, and probably by the time you guys get it, maybe there will be some activity, so we did not want it to be completely obsolete based off of that. So John has come up with some categories that I'm going to fill in the blanks on. He called it the goodies, but I feel like that was a little bit taken by, you know, a singer who's not married to a quarterback in the NFL and all of that stuff. So we're going to come with a different name for it. I don't know what that name is going to be yet, but we will figure that out. But first, we are going to start with the, hey, y'all hear that organ? That's the New York Knicks. That's who we're starting with today. For a team that's won a lot of games, for a team that is steadily climbing up the Eastern Conference charts, you know what else is climbing up? Injuries. You know the one player they can't afford to lose? Jalen Brunson. Suffered an ankle injury in the fourth quarter last night against Memphis. Important to say, no limp, no crutches, no boot. Tom Thibodeau, who's never the most outgoing-sounding chap, sounded a little more dour than usual, and I wonder if that has something to do with what could be coming. Especially Josh Hart. Josh Hart suffered an ankle injury. Both of them, because of the reporters on the ground, said, hey, didn't look like either one of them had any noticeable limp. But Tibbs' sound, he said, hey, both of them were getting checked up by the medical staff after the game. And we all know that, especially with ankle injuries, you're not going to know until the next day. Adrenaline comes down. You're going to sleep on it. This is how you're going to feel. And remember, OG Anunoby out. Julius Randle already out. So the strength in numbers thing that the Knicks have been leaning on in having the two headliners at the top, adding the third headliner, it's going to be something to watch. John, let's get to these midseason awards. We're not going to call them the goodies. We're going to call them something else. We're just not going to call them that right now. And I'm letting everybody know that that was you who came up with that and not I.
We can call them the Vinnies.
I'll take that. The Vinnies with an IE, y'all. Anybody who spells my name with a Y, I'm wondering if you're considering me, looking at me like I'm Joe Pesci from my cousin Vinny. But I'm black, which means IE at the end, y'all. IE. But go ahead, John.
You credited me for having a good idea, but this idea started with yours. So let's start there. You said, what's the biggest story we're not paying attention to? And I threw a couple in there, and you threw a couple in there, and I'm going to let you pick from the rundown which one you want to hit first.
Well, I think it's important to note, because I think, A, Ben Simmons becomes a punchline after a certain point, right? He's a disappointment, so to speak. Like, it goes through cycles. It is the wonder kid, then it's the disappointment, then it's the afterthought, and then you settle into another place and you're not sure what place of comfort that is and how we think about him. I believe Ben Simmons can be a useful NBA player. As long as he's not making, you know, $40 million, $35 million, he's not making a max contract. Like, he can be a useful NBA player, and because he's not making that money, you won't be asking him to do all the things of a $40 million player. And now he's, you know, triple single and everything else. Like, you can see the minute ways that he helps the Brooklyn Nets when he's on the floor. You know, they play with pace. He can be a one-man fast break. He can spray the ball around. he helps with shot creation because there's not a lot of guys who can get their own shots outside of Cam Thomas. Now, when Ben Simmons first stepped on the scene, we were saying, y'all got to remember, we were saying a lot here. We were saying LeBron James. We were saying Magic Johnson. We were saying his profile, his physical profile, he's built like a Giannis Antetokounmpo. And we were wondering which guy was going to be the biggest story of player development. Clearly, that question has been answered by Giannis. And then, you know, you had the three-point troubles, the free throw troubles, the dunk that didn't happen in 2021 against the Atlanta Hawks. And everything seemed to sort of spiral down from there. Now, he's almost at a point, John, where he won't be thought about. But maybe for him, that's better because the expectations are nil. And that beneath all of that, beneath the disappointment, beneath the underachievement, beneath all the questions, the bones of a good basketball player is still there. It's just, will that be utilized in Brooklyn with the Nets? Or will it just basically have to be one of those things where until that salary goes down, until he signs a new contract where it's not an albatross, it's not taking up such a huge chunk of your cap, that he can truly sort of grow into and develop and evolve into the player that he will probably settle into for the rest of his career, however long that is. And I think that's a story we have not paid as much attention to, because usually, John, when we talk about Ben Simmons, you know what we're talking about? Ben Simmons is ramping up. Ben Simmons is on the way back. And then when he starts playing, we don't really think about it anymore. Like, we may note the first game, and then we go from there. And then he misses a game, and then we go right back into our cycles, right back into, oh, Ben Simmons isn't playing anymore. But I think there is a place for him where just the expectations are lower, the salary is lower. It's just a matter of when and where.
I am absolutely fascinated by Ben Simmons.
Okay.
And I don't know that there's another player like him that's had this kind of career trajectory. And I'm not going to go deep into Ben Simmons. You did all that. And you did it well. But I'm going to sound super old when I say this. And Vinny, you okay. And I, we talk about feeling like old guys sometimes. I'm going to feel super old when I say this. I always thought it was kind of BS when you heard scouts talk about prospects, guys coming into the league, and whether or not they love basketball, love the game of basketball. And I always was like, that's stupid. Like, these guys love competing. They love the money. They love the lifestyle. They don't need to love the game necessarily to be dedicated to it, right? Wow, that sounded like something straight out of the Love Doctor episode next week. But I think this whole system we have now where players only have to play 1 year of non-high school basketball to make it into the NBA is getting a lot of guys to the NBA, putting a lot of money in their pocket without us knowing or really caring whether or not they love basketball. And you were talking about like, oh, Ben Simmons' next contract. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this contract, Ben Simmons was like, that's enough money and attention for me. I'm going to wander off and go do something else. And honestly, I feel a similar way about DeAndre Ayton in Portland and a number of different players who it's like, we love this guy. They were a top 3-4 pick in the draft. And we're like waiting for them. And then it gets to the point where it's like, oh no, they're never going to do that thing where they're so hungry for more that they develop into a better player. And part of it is obviously his body and his health and all of that. And we all were rooting for Ben Simmons because the finished product is so alluring.
Right.
But I don't personally see that second contract, low money. Hey, I'm going to be an Aaron Gordon, a fourth, fifth piece in a starting lineup for a championship contending team that can play defense, that can play the perimeter, that can defend the rim a little bit, that can run a fast break, that can make smart passes, all of that stuff, and will cover up for the fact that I don't want to shoot or can't shoot. I don't see him doing that for no money because I don't think he would see the point.
Well, I think it's multiple things that you touched on there. Number one, when you talk about love of the game, it's not necessarily about love of the game. It's about love of being good at something. Because I think love of the game applies to more seven-footers. And here's why. Seven-footers, unless you are a late bloomer, unless you're like a David Robinson late bloomer. David Robinson sprouted, I think, from like 6'4 to 7 feet tall, like when he was in the Naval Academy. But when you are 7 feet tall or you are close to 7 feet tall, you're playing basketball because people have told you to play basketball. Because what the hell else are you supposed to do at 7 feet tall? You don't have the privilege to be able to love the game at its purest level. Now, someone like Ben Simmons, because he grew up outside of the American basketball industrial system, right? He grew up outside of the American industrial complex, right? He came here later, but you get the picture. What I've come to learn, and I think this is more of this generation of player, and Adam Silver spoke about it a little bit a few years ago when he said, this generation of players are more unhappy than ever with the advent of social media, and people can get to them and have access to them, and they can see it. They can see all the criticisms from Twitter bots. They can see all the criticisms on Instagram. Like, this affects these guys. But more than anything, John, these guys like dominating. They like being good at something. It's not necessarily love of the game, although love of the game can derive from that. It can just come down to me, from amateur psychology, I'm 30,000 feet away, but observing some of these players the way that I do, it feels like they love being great at something. And the second that it becomes hard and the answers are not easily accessible, then what happens? Then where's the alternative? Because usually it is, oh, I've just come up on a roadblock. There's the question. Here's the answer. Back to dominating. What if it's a little bit more complicated than that? What if your body starts to fail you? And then you have to work just to get back on the floor, and you're not as successful as you used to be at every walk of life. Like, everybody was the man in their high school. Everybody was the man where they grew up. It's just who can figure out what the next step is, either to evolve into a dominating player or figure out what their role is in the NBA and figure out, hey, I can make a lot of money here doing all this. Like, the ones that you see figuring it out, because everybody, trust me, y'all, believe me here, as many guys as it is scoring 20 and 9 in the NBA, and it's a record number of guys, it's like 48 guys scoring 20 in the league, I guarantee you it's 100 more who feel like that they would be scoring 20 a night if not for the coach, if not for the organization. That's the way these guys are built, and they're wired by and large. So I think in the case of someone like Ben Simmons, who has 1 year left on his contract of $40 million next year, and then, like John said, John, you're right. He could say, you know what? I've had enough money. I've made enough. My body hurts. I can be done. That could very well be the ending of this Ben Simmons story, and not in a sad way. It might just be sad for us because we may have seen the three All-Star appearances, and we may see the guy who was a two-way force and everything else, and see so much more, and he may not see that. And we can't always assume and project that a player will want the same things that the media wants him to want. Now, do you want to move on to the next category? Or you got something else?
I want to do this through line, and we can do it real quick, because you mentioned a lot of stuff there that I think is important to this next story that no one has been talking about. And granted, this is not an all season story. This is more of a recent story, but I remember a couple months ago, I don't think we were recording. I think it was before or after a show, me and you were talking, and you said you were a little bit concerned about Scoot Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I think Ben Simmons is like kind of an interesting case is that he won Rookie of the Year and then made it to three All-Star games. We all saw how great he was, and then he just fell off a cliff. That's not how that normally goes. It normally goes more like what's happening with Scoot, where he couldn't figure out how to play at an NBA level through the first half of his rookie season. But since in the last week, in like two or three games in the last week, he's averaging well over 20 points a game. I think he had a game where he scored over 30. It looks like the offense is starting to come easier for him. It looks like he's starting to be coached and make adjustments. Defense is still whatever, but the kid's still 19, 20 years old. So like he's following more of the regular trajectory of a rookie in that it started rough and he figured it out, as opposed to Ben Simmons, where it didn't really get rough until year four. So this is just a very quick opportunity for you to comment, because I haven't heard you talk about Scoot in weeks. Comment if you've seen anything different from him, if you've seen any improvement from him, or if this is just like people don't care about him, the Blazers, they're just going to let him run down the court and score because they know that they're going to be able to outscore him.
I think the point that we are, I won't say we're, the point that we're missing on this here is Shaedon Sharpe could be out for the rest of the season. I'm not saying that with any fact or anything like that. He's having core muscle surgery in February. Doesn't seem like the smart money would be on him returning. I think Damian Lillard had core muscle surgery for Portland a couple of years ago in that year where he only played like 25, 26 games. That opens the door for a guy like Scoot, who has struggled with A, being able to get to the basket and finish at the rim, which is paramount for someone like him because he's not a strong outside shooter yet. So you're going to heavily depend on turning a corner, getting that shoulder in front of someone or getting that shoulder parallel to your defender and being able to explode. And that hasn't been the case early. Now, in that 30-point game against the Denver Nuggets or one of those games, I know he got to the line 11 times. That's a huge, huge sign for him. That means you're getting past your defender, you're drawing contact, and the refs are acknowledging that, even as a rookie, that you've got, that you have a physical advantage. The other part here, which is really, I won't say unspoken, is under-talked about in a way, is his coach is Chauncey Billups. Chauncey Billups is a point guard who had to turn into a point guard, who had to go through different stops. Chauncey Billups was traded midway through his rookie season out of Boston by Rick Pitino, because Rick Pitino thought that he was getting the Tim Duncan sweepstakes, the tanking of all tanking, and he wound up with Chauncey Billups and Ron Mercer. And Chauncey Billups was traded from Boston, then to Toronto, then to Orlando, then to Denver, then to Minnesota, and then to Detroit. And then Minnesota, he started to turn it around. I feel like I don't have his bio in front of me, but I feel like that was the order of operations for Chauncey Billups' career as far as the teams that he was moved to. And so Chauncey A is not going to put so much on Scoot Henderson that Scoot will fail miserably. He's going to, in a way, protect Scoot from himself early. And then allow Scoot to play a little bit more. Add to the fact that you have Ant Simons, who's a better point guard than Scoot is right now, and a better player than he is right now. So there's a lot of factors at work there. I think Chauncey being his coach is a really good thing for a struggling point guard, because Chauncey has been there and he's not going to completely panic. And he's going to say, this is part of the process. And for a long time, y'all, it was a really tough transition for rookies to come in and play point guard in the NBA because the floor is not always spread. Point guards have an exorbitant amount of freedom right now in today's game because the floor is spread. You can take more threes. There's more pace. There's more possessions, all of those things. But it wasn't always like that. So for Chauncey to see Scoot doing this, it harkens him back to his own experiences in the late 90s when the game was a much more slowdown, compressed game. You played it inside out, and if you were a shoot first point guard, that probably wasn't going to be the get down of your coach. So yes, that is an under talked about story. He's not Chet. He's not going to be Victor. He's not going to be one of those guys that just grabs you and commands your attention from October to now. We almost, if we take a peek, we look in and we see that you're not getting things done, we kind of forget about you until you give us a reason to come back. And that's kind of what's happened with Scoot. Next, John, let's hear it.
This is your category. You put one in there, and I put one in there. Biggest playoff destroyer that we don't see coming.
Well, I have Kawhi Leonard that we don't see coming. Because, once again, as a basketball public, we have gotten used to the Kawhi Leonard story. Kawhi gives us a peek. He gives us like a morsel. You know, we get our mouse fixed for some hash and we ain't got no hash. We fix our mouse for some orange juice, ain't nothing but a swallow in there quick. You know, like that sort of thing. That's a Harlem Nights reference for y'all. Go watch it. Eddie Murphy, Red Fox, Richard Pryor. Great movie. Della Reese got shot in her pinky toe. One of the funniest, like, things that wasn't a skit in the history of life. But that's Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's the guy that scored 38 against Kevin Durant in the first game of their first round series, Clippers Suns, last year. And then the game after that, he tore his meniscus and we didn't realize it. And I saw the Clippers a couple of nights ago when they were in Detroit. I talked to Ty Lue. The Clippers are the hottest team in the NBA, the absolute hottest team in the league. Everybody's going through midseason malaise or 50-game malaise. The Clippers are out here taking 7-game road trip seriously. Y'all, they had a Miami, Atlanta, road, back-to-back. And maybe it was good it was a back-to-back, because if you know anything about Miami and Atlanta, you know those are places that are going to trip you up, right? They took both of those games. The Miami nightlife gets you. The Atlanta nightlife and sometimes daylife gets you. And the Clippers treated those games with the importance of a veteran team that's not playing any games. And a big reason for that is Kawhi Leonard. I think he's played 44, 45 games so far this season, only missed a handful. He signed an extension with the Clippers. He nor Paul George walked into this season with an extension. This was a make or break year. They're moving into that Intuit Dome in Inglewood. This is their last year at Staples. They're carving out their own identity. Kawhi Leonard, since December 1st, I want to say averaging 26, 6, and 5. I could be wrong on that, but it's something to that effect. And he's shooting 57 from the field, 50 from three, over 90 from the line. Those are not numbers that someone should be having. That's not sustainable. I'm going to say sustainable. It could be sustainable. It's not realistic. This ain't NBA 2K. This is NBA Live. That's how bad this man is, y'all. So when we talk about what's going to happen in the playoffs, and we're saying the Clippers are that close to the top of the Western Conference. And in my piece, when I talked to Ty Lue, he said, we're playing for home court advantage. We want home court advantage in the first two rounds. We're not talking about health. We're not talking about all those other things. You have a great coaching job from Ty Lue, but Kawhi Leonard is the player that makes all of those things go. And James Harden and Russell Westbrook are kind of like the glue. They play above their heads a lot of time, but they also know how to back up and give Kawhi Leonard and Paul George their space. And if Kawhi Leonard is the playoff destroyer that he's been throughout his career, when he's been healthy, even that 2019 version, y'all, that dude was hurt. That dude was playing on one leg in Toronto. And he went out there and single-handedly won the Toronto Raptors a championship. I'm not saying he has to even get back to that. I'm saying if he's a reasonable and healthy version of himself, which we have not seen normal circumstances for Kawhi Leonard in a very long time. And sometimes there's a reason for that, because your body doesn't always get healthier as you get older. Sometimes you just get older. But if he is that guy, I talked to a GM a couple weeks ago, and he asked me, he said, well, who do you have coming out the West? And I said, look, as long as that fat man is still standing, and I've said it here, I'll say it again. As long as that fat man is still standing and still breathing, that's where we're going. He says, you're going to ignore that Kawhi Leonard is one of the greatest playoff performers of our time? I said, absolutely not. I just have to see it. I haven't seen it in a while. You know, I'm not saying he became Lauryn Hill, but I'm saying he became Lauryn Hill. Right? Ouch. Y'all remember Lauryn Hill? She had that one great album. But Erykah Badu had two better ones. But she had that great album, that Miss Education, right? And then she stopped showing up to concerts. And then she stopped, you know, showing up altogether. But then every now and again, she just drop a verse. She just drop a verse. Like Lauryn Hill is one of the greatest singers and at the same time, one of the greatest rappers. It's almost like if Drake was a little crazier and then had substance, right? Like Kawhi Leonard is one of the greatest defensive players we'll ever see in basketball, and he happens to score 26 points a game, right? Okay, cool. how Lauryn Hill would show up every now and again and tease an album. That's what Kawhi Leonard is. Is Kawhi Leonard teasing us with a championship ring here? I'm not sure. But in a Western Conference that has Oklahoma City and Minnesota, who I am becoming very, very skittish on as far as Minnesota, then the three teams that I'm looking at in the Western Conference will clearly be the champions. The Phoenix Suns, who I still have questions about, and the Clippers, who I have fewer questions about. And yes, I have questions about Lauryn Hill. I mean Kawhi Leonard. Of course I have questions. But if you're saying playoff destroyer that I don't see coming, that's mine.
All right. I love this for a number of different reasons.
You didn't see that Lauryn Hill thing coming, did you?
I did not see the Lauryn Hill thing coming, or the Drake line for that matter. So it's February. This is around the time that I think our conversation should start tilting this way. Not that we need to teach the people that are listening to this podcast about basketball. They know. But this is the time when you have to start preparing people for the fact that playoff basketball and regular season basketball are two very different things. And if you are a team or a player who lives on three-point shooting, you're going to be less effective in the playoffs. And Kawhi is a guy who can do the three-point shooting, but his bread and butter is the mid-range, right? And that's cool. I love that. I know you love that because we don't see enough players in today's NBA that make a living in the mid-range. But when you think of the guys who do, it's all of the guys who have been great playoff performers, including Jokic, including a Kevin Durant, whatever. These guys who, they live in the mid-range, but they can take you outside and shoot a three, so you have to respect it. And that's how they can get by you and get to their spots in the mid-range or at the basket or whatever. The next guy is kind of the backwards.
I'm going to give you one quick point on that before we go there, because I like where you're going.
Okay.
I said this on Twitter the other day, and people get mad at me. So I'm going to say it here so y'all can get mad at me here too. All right? Because I don't care if y'all get mad at me. I hope y'all realize that. I love you, but I don't care if you get mad. All right? Kawhi Leonard is one of those guys, because of his strength, because of the massive hands that he has, he could play in handshake air and everything else. But there's few players. There's only one real player that says, I'm picking a spot on the floor and I'm getting there. I'm getting there in two dribbles or less. And there's nothing you can do about it. I'm getting to the spot, I'm rising up, or I'm getting to the spot and I'm exploding. One of those is 23. And I don't mean LeBron, I mean Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's one of his greatest and understated gifts was he's at the top of the key, or he's on the wing, or wherever he's got the ball, and he's decided, I'm getting to this spot. I'm getting my shoulder in front of you. I'm exploding past you. This is even older Michael Jordan. You know, the jumper over Brian Russell in game one in 97. He literally picked the spot on the floor and said, I'm beating you to the spot. I'm elevating. I'm hitting the shot. That was the essence of Jordan, with all the flash and everything else, was the genuine effectiveness and the simplicity in how he does things. Kawhi Leonard is the same way. He's going to pick a spot on the floor. He's going to bully his way there. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. And in playoff basketball, you need that, because you need guys who can score outside of the framework of the offense. You need guys who can beat a double team on their own. That's Kawhi Leonard. And next, to your point about the inverse of Kawhi Leonard's game.
I just want to tack on to that so that people understand what we're saying here. You are making a comparison between Kawhi Leonard and Michael Jordan, and rightfully so. If you're wondering why Jimmy Butler has been so effective in the playoffs the last few years, it's because he's pretty good at that. He's not as good as Kawhi Leonard at that. And he's not as good a defender as Kawhi Leonard. He's not as good a rebounder as Kawhi Leonard. He's like a 70% version of Kawhi Leonard, maybe an 80% Ooh. Version of Kawhi Leonard. And that's why he's so effective, because a 100% version of Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs is almost unstoppable.
I would say, before Jimmy sees this or hears this, right?
Is Jimmy going to hate me now? Is he going to listen to this podcast and hate me?
No, Jimmy's going to hate me. That's all. Because Jimmy's going to say, I put the battery in your bag. No, there was a time, and I tweeted this out. I tweeted this out a couple years ago. And I think it was during the bubble. It's either during the bubble or the year after the bubble, when the Heat were a year, not a year away, a three-point shot away And Jimmy almost dragged that Heat team to the finals against Boston. I think it was 22. And I said, if you give me PG, you give me Kawhi, you give me Jimmy Butler, I'm taking Jimmy Butler every time. I said that. And I said that not because he's 70% of Kawhi Leonard, but because he's so damned determined to prove you wrong. He's so damned determined that, okay, I'm not the physically gifted guy, but I'm really actually really talented, and you're not going to outdog me. And that's what it is. And it's not a 70% of Kawhi Leonard. I think he's actually more, if you're saying Kawhi at his absolute height, Jimmy's probably 90 of that.
That's fair.
In terms of he's a lot closer. It's just that Kawhi has big ass hands, and Kawhi can naturally hold probably a little bit more weight than Jimmy can hold. So that changes the trajectory and how you do things. But that's an excellent point though, John.
Cool. Let's go on to the next guy, the inverse, a guy who his game is mostly built on shooting, especially from the outside, and the rest of it is kind of the secondary to open up the shooting, and that's Damian Lillard. I have seen Damian Lillard be great in the playoffs, but I've never seen him do it with a second player that is anywhere near as good as Giannis. So I think Dame has already been a playoff destroyer, as has Kawhi, but this is a real opportunity. And like, I know he's a little older than he used to be. He's got more miles on his tires and all that. But I think that there's a real opportunity for Dame to just catch a heater because he doesn't have to carry everything on his shoulders. He's not carrying the entire city of Milwaukee on his shoulders the way he did with Portland. And you wrote a great piece this week about the stuff Dame is carrying on his shoulders. And that's an important thing that I want you to mention. But I think there's a real chance that Dame could do even more damage in the playoffs than we're used to from him.
I think there's a lot of things that we often acknowledge, but we don't put a lot of weight on. And when I talked to Dame a few weeks ago, this was maybe days before Adrian Griffin got fired, and which kind of delayed the piece coming out because you just had to wait for all of the smoke to clear. And Dame is going through a divorce. That is a real life thing happening. And Dame said to me, hey, I want you guys to know, when he brought it up that he was going through a divorce, I said, hey, you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. You don't want anyone to be in an uncomfortable space, but when people open the door to it and talk about it, you want to go a little bit deeper and see if they're willing to open up. And fortunately for us, and fortunately for me, he did. And he didn't buck back against the question. I just said, you know, how difficult is this for you? And he brought up, everybody talks about the game being a sanctuary and what happens when you step on the floor, you lose all your problems. That's not the case for me. And I'm like, sometimes you're in two places at once. Yes. And you rarely hear that type of honesty and candor from anybody. And that's not just basketball. You ask a regular person if they're going through a divorce, and if they have some type of high pressure, high stress job occupation, they're not going to admit that those other factors are in their heads, because the job requires supreme concentration. You don't want to admit that those other things are going on. And it's no guarantee that whatever proceedings that are going on between Dame and his soon-to-be ex-wife will be done by the playoffs either. This is something, especially when you have three kids that are now three time zones away, that you have to deal with. Now, from the number standpoint, Dame is in a completely different situation. He's no longer the top guy that the entire system is being built around. He's playing with another high usage player in Giannis. He's playing with a guy in Chris Middleton who's trying to find his way as well, being the third option. Before, Chris Middleton was the second option. He'd be the guy running screen and rolls on the side with Giannis and those two figuring things out. And Jrue Holiday was the third option. So now there is another shift in addition to Chris Middleton, who hurt his ankle last night and walked out of Phoenix in a walking boot, which further complicates things, because now that takes away valuable sweat equity that you're learning with your new teammate and your new coach in Doc Rivers, who's trying to slowly integrate and figure out all these things. So for the Bucks, yeah, it's a lot. For Dame, it is a lot. And the numbers don't say, the numbers say Dame is shooting 42 from the field, 35 from three. And he's starting the All-Star game, which is why people were saying Jalen Brunson should have started. Okay, cool. Dame is starting his first one. And I don't have a problem with that at all. But to John's point, we've seen Dame have great moments in the postseason. Great, great moments. But he's never been on the team A that's been favored and never been on the team that had realistic expectations. And the Bucks, even though they are 1-4 with Doc Rivers, I suspect they'll get their act together sometime after the All-Star break when you have a few more practice days and you have time to implement a new system and everything else. This will not last, but they knew that Adrian Griffin was not going to be the guy to lead them where they needed to go. This was something that was pretty much inevitable. You could feel it. I could feel it when they were in Detroit for a few days. You could just feel something was going to happen. You didn't realize it was going to happen when they won like 6 out of 7 or 6 out of 8, but that just shows you the dire situation that they were in. Dame, playoff destroyer, something to really, really pay attention to. What's next, John?
I want to just kind of rattle through these. I'm going to list the 4 teams that are considered the elite in the Eastern Conference. We're not going to include the Cleveland Cavaliers, who I think are 9-1 in their last 10 or something, currently sitting number 2 in the East. They still have to kind of prove themselves.
Mm-hmm.
These other 4 teams, I want to know if you see a fatal flaw in them as we kind of get on our runway towards the playoffs here. So let's start at the top. Do the Boston Celtics have a fatal playoff flaw?
Big one. Big fatal flaw. Okay, y'all? And the numbers will say that if you put them man for man, they're the best 7 in the league, best top 7 players in the league. Starting 5, as long as they're healthy, with Porzingis unlocking and adding, and you still got Al Horford with the glue and everything else. But man, the variance in that 3-point shooting. I believe they take way too many threes. And friend of the show, Gary Washburn, has said that plenty of times to Joe Mazzulla, and they have their own Tom and Jerry act, it seems like, after games. And Joe was just leaning into it. Let it fly. Which means you can blow teams out, which also means you can get blown out. But in the playoffs, as John has mentioned before when we were talking about Kawhi, I think the variance in that, I think with tired legs, I think with asking Jason Tatum to be an all-world defender and then telling him, hey, turn into a 40% three-point shooter in the postseason, I feel like that's asking a lot. Even Drew Holiday, who hasn't had great postseason since 2021 when he came up huge for the Bucks in the NBA Finals and huge for the Bucks before they got to the Finals, I think that's asking a lot. We all know about, simultaneously, Jaylen Brown's issues. We all know that the Boston Celtics, they did go down 3-0 to the Miami Heat last year, and they've made some changes since then. But those things still linger into my mind, and I'm not of the belief that you can have one bad shooting game, one great shooting game, and that offsets it. One bad shooting game in a 7-game series, because you can have a good shooting game, you can have an average shooting game, and lose that because that other team shoots better. If you don't manufacture other ways to win, I got problems.
All right, next one. Let's talk about, we just talked about them a little bit. Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. What's their fatal flaw?
It's simple, y'all. It's their defense. It's their perimeter defense. I believe Giannis is still capable of revving it up at the second and third level. We all know Brooke Lopez is one of the best rim protectors. But A, Chris Middleton's coming off those knee injuries. Jay Crowder is older. Damian Lillard's never been a defender. Malik Beasley is maybe one of their best defenders, but you're not. That's not what you're paying him to do. That's not what you're asking him to do. So you're very curious to see perimeter defense. Every year they've made, John, every year, the past 2 years, they've made a deal at the deadline. Not literally on deadline day, but perhaps on deadline day. 2 years ago, they got Serge Ibaka. Last year, they traded for Jay Crowder. I would not be surprised if they tried to add another perimeter defender, just a guy, just someone that Doc Rivers can trust, that can prevent there just being a freeway to the lane in the postseason, because that can prove to be their undoing.
And to that point, because I'm the producer of all the shows on the Ball Don't Lie podcast. We talked about this a little bit yesterday on Divine Intervention with Steve Jones. Both guys kind of agreed that a really good fit with the Bucks would be Bruce Brown.
Mm.
Not that the Bucks necessarily have enough to go get Bruce Brown, especially when every team seems interested in Bruce Brown.
Right.
And then I saw a story this morning, I think from Jake Fisher, saying that the Bucks were talking to the Raptors about if there's a way for them to get Bruce Brown. So, yes, that would be another perimeter defender who would help the Bucks quite a bit. But they spent most of their assets bringing Dame Lillard to town. So I don't know if they're going to have enough to get him. All right, the next one. The Philadelphia 76ers. And I'll just set you up here. I think it was hilariously predictable that the 76ers traded James Harden and seemingly got better. The vibes got better. Everything seemed to fit better. Everyone was complimenting Nick Nurse's coaching. It couldn't be more 76ers than at that point going, wow, this is the best chance we have to win a title with Joel Embiid. Everything is going our way. Little tear in the knee. It's so very Sixers.
Little tear in the knee. A procedure, not quite a surgery, but just a procedure that Joel Embiid went down with. And who knows how long he's going to be out? It's at least 4 weeks. And believe it or not, y'all, we are more than 50 games into the season. There's only but so much stretch of this marathon that is left. And Cleveland has catapulted to second in the East. And even if you don't take them seriously, that is a spot that they have taken out of the play-in. So even if Embiid comes back in 6 weeks, is the ramp up going to be enough? Because they are so dependent on him. You don't lose 36 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. You don't lose that and you're just able to redistribute that to B-Ball Paul and then Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris. That doesn't work like that. Some players are irreplaceable. Joel Embiid is one of those guys. They could find themselves, if Embiid comes back, the best case scenario could be them finding themselves in the play-in. That's the best case scenario, possibly. And then what happens? Then what are you being rewarded with? The Boston Celtics? I mean, you could be being rewarded with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were a little undermanned against the bully New York Knicks last year. So things could eventually work out. But right now, things look very murky because we have to make a lot of assumptions about Joel Embiid's knee. Remember, that knee has undergone a lot of surgery. There's a lot of atrophy there, knees and his back. And considering the 2 years that he's missed already, like those red flags were the only reasons that he did not go number one in that draft. Remember, that draft was Joel Embiid, Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker. And had people realized, had people known that even Joel Embiid, with the issues that he's had, if they figured out that Joel Embiid 2 years later was going to come out to be the All-Star and then the MVP, even with the questions that we've had about him and how he's performed, they'd have took him first. Who's we got next?
We got the New York Knicks, who you talked about up at the top. Jalen Brunson is injured. Josh Hart has an injury. OG Anunoby is injured. Julius Randle is injured. This is starting to feel like one of those famous Tibbs Bulls teams where Tibbs just plays everyone as many minutes and as hard as he possibly can until the wheels fall off.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a couple names in our last podcast with Jake, you know, Mikal Bridges and Bruce Brown. And you're wondering if there's going to be some traction there over the next day. Alec Burks from the Detroit Pistons as a backup guard. Maybe they can, you know, throw him a couple of second round picks there. You wonder the lack of fresh bodies. And even though we're not in the quote unquote low management era, I guarantee you Tibbs was, there was no person happier, more happier than Adam Silver when there was a player participation policy than Tibbs. Tibbs was like, y'all ain't sitting no way. Run them sprints, right? Three guys average 35 minutes or more for the Knicks right now. Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, OG Anunoby. OG Anunoby is going to wind up averaging 40 minutes by the time he steps back on the floor, okay? Just because, A, they're that good with him. If you remember our conversation with Fred Katz last week, we went really, really deep on the Knicks. He's really unlocked them offensively as well as being a dude who just mucks everything up, right? So, of course, Tibbs is going to deploy him to the max. Jalen Brunson, of course, he doesn't mind being coached hard. That's just who he is. And Julius Randle has always been Pac-Man. He's always been a guy eating up pellets, eating up minutes, eating up games. He wants to play. That's how it works. But you wonder, if your coach is coaching you for 82 playoff games, how much do you have left when it's time for the playoffs? Last year, you saw they could bully ball the Cleveland Cavaliers because Cleveland was just light in the pans. Evan Mobley, light. Jared Allen, light. We don't know what the matchup is going to be this time. We don't know what the seeding is going to be. That's why it's very important to talk about these fatal flaws, because you could see a team like the Knicks making the Eastern Conference Finals, or you could see a team like the Knicks being burnt out in the first round because their bodies are burnt out. Now, Producer John, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to put this disclaimer here. The thoughts of Producer John are Producer John and Producer John's only. They are not a reflection of Ball Don't Lie and or the Good Word with Goodwill podcast. Producer John, have at it.
Okay, so I put this under the category of the most predictable turn of events. But I'm going to go back. I'm going to give a shout out to Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson, the All the Smoke podcast, because I saw this about a week ago. They had Snoop Dogg on. And they asked Snoop Dogg, a devout Lakers fan, mm-hmm. if he had a message for Jeannie Buss, someone that he knows, that he mm-hmm. has a friendship with, a personal relationship with. And Snoop said, Jeannie, it's time to start moving some furniture. And he said, some big pieces of furniture. And then he went on to say that other NBA teams around the league have these young bucks, these young guns, that they come in and the Lakers can't keep up with because they're too old. I took that to mean Snoop's ready for a LeBron trade. A day later, there was reports, there was whispers about a LeBron trade, and then Rich Paul had to come out and say the Lakers aren't trading LeBron. Great. Then LeBron throws a Knicks towel over his shoulder, walking off the court at MSG. Everyone freaks out. LeBron posts to his Instagram a picture of him standing at midcourt at MSG and says, my absolute favorite playground. Brian Windhorst, kind of known as a guy who's on the LeBron beat, when asked why LeBron would do this, post IG, throw the Knicks towel over his shoulder, he said he's trying to put pressure on the Lakers. Our buddy Jovan Buha came out yesterday and said LeBron wants the Lakers to go all in at the trade deadline. That much is obvious. But the Lakers, it would not be surprising if they made no moves or just a minimal move before the trade deadline. I think this is a little bit like when you're in a relationship, you know it's run its course, you know it's not going to go on forever. And that's when you start looking around at some other people and you start flirting with other people and wondering, what's my off-ramp here? What's my exit strategy here? Is there something else that I can line up before this one is over? I think the Lakers told LeBron, no, we've already sacrificed enough of our future for you. We can't do any more without really destroying this team. We're not going all in. Or maybe they went to him and said, we'll go all in if you sign a contract extension and we don't have your free agency hanging over us this upcoming offseason. And I think LeBron is now thinking about what his post-Lakers career might be. And the most obvious place for him to go is probably the Knicks. I don't think he can go back to Cleveland. I don't think he can go back to Miami. I don't think the Clippers need him or want him. He could maybe go to Golden State, try and help out his buddies Steph and Draymond to rebuild that thing.
His buddy Draymond.
Okay. But I think what we are seeing is something akin to the end of a relationship when you know it's over before it's actually over. Thoughts?
Well, could be thoughts for the Love Doctor episode next week. But I think, A, I'm not even sure that LeBron can sign an extension because of his age and some machinations with the CBA, but LeBron does have an option at the end of the season. And we talked about it a couple weeks ago with Dan Werke from the Los Angeles Times. We brought this up that it hadn't been talked about, that LeBron does have an option. And quiet has kept LeBron and spent more time in L.A. He got there in 2018. He spent more time in L.A. than he has in any other stop, save for his first 7 years in Cleveland, which basically he was bound to staying by function of the CBA and getting max contracts. Now, getting a max contract is a critical thing for LeBron because he has not taken a penny less since that deal in Miami. He's taken the max every single time. Max money, max leverage. LeBron's numbers will say that he's deserving of the max leverage because he's 25-7-7 and he's 40 years old or about to be 40. But you're not seeing the return on the investment from a team winning standpoint. The Lakers are barely above 500. On a given night, and I've said this before, I will say it again. On a given night, LeBron can concentrate and be the best player on the floor. You saw it in the in-season tournament. You see it in certain instances where he can rev it up and be just as good as anybody. But expecting him to do that every night is a difficult task. And the way that the Lakers are built, it's expecting him to be that guy every single night. And there's no one single personnel move that the Lakers have with just D'Angelo Russell as a trade chip, because they're not trading Austin Reeves and nobody else really wants what the Lakers have to this point, that can get you beyond the play-in, that can get you beyond all of these other things. So, no, I'm not surprised that LeBron would be looking around and flirting around, but I have no doubt that LeBron at 40 damn years old, he get cold like the rest of us get cold. He wants to stay in L.A. Trust me, when you start coming down the other side of those 30s, you get chilly real fast. Trust me. Look, guess what? If LeBron did go to New York, you know how often we see him? About as often as we see Lauryn Hill.
I will say, before we move on to our final thing.
Yep.
If there is an easy way to make this work too, because you know me, I spend half my day on the trade machine just having fun.
Yes, you do.
If the Knicks do not trade Evan Fournier at the trade deadline, everyone could just opt into their player options, Fournier is a team option. You could do Fournier and you could take Julius Randle and send him back to the Lakers and a sign and trade that brings LeBron over to the Knicks.
Yeah, but what is the advantage for the Lakers doing that?
If LeBron tells him he's leaving, but they can get Julius Randle, I guess Randle doesn't really play that great with Anthony Davis. We got proof of that, right?
Well, put it like this. The Lakers, throughout the course of the bus leadership, and I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, since 1980, the Lakers have either had Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, or LeBron James for every year except for six. There was a stretch between 1991 and 1996 where Magic was retired due to HIV, and you had the Nick at Night Lakers and Eldon Campbell and Vlade Divac and Eddie Jones and Seth Ceballos, all those guys. Then Magic came back, played, retired again. Shaq and Kobe came the next year. And then after Kobe retired in 2016, it was a two-year stretch. Then LeBron James arrived. If there ain't a star there better be a star on the way.
Fair enough. You want to hit the our games to watch for the rest of this week?
Well, I can go first. I will give you, because of some of the things that we've mentioned earlier today, Pacers and Knicks. Because A, I want to see if Jalen Brunson is going to play. I think that is Saturday night. That is not an ABC game. But I'm very curious to see if the Knicks are going to continue this streak. And I want to see Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam against that Knicks hellacious defense. And as a bonus, Golden State Phoenix. Because those teams are going in, I won't say different directions, but Phoenix has found a way to move that trajectory up. And Golden State is still trying to figure out how to play. Will Golden State make a big deal? Will Chris Paul still be there? Will Klay Thompson still be there? Will Andrew Wiggins still be there? We know Kevin Durant's going to be on the other side. So those are my two games. What about you, John?
Well, my first one, because you know I always have to give you a Mavericks one, is Mavericks Knicks Thursday. Like you said, I'll be interested to see who plays for the Knicks. I'll be interested to see who plays for the Mavericks because they've had a lot of people in and out of the lineup. I don't know if you saw it. Luka last night played with a face mask for like the first 5 minutes and then just took it off. Like, it's amazing.
That's so Luka.
It is amazing that some players are like, I know I need this on my face, but it makes me worse at basketball. So I'm going to play basketball without it on my face and just risk whatever the doctors don't want me to risk. But they always play each other well. A lot of times this is a big game and it'll be, you know, a nationally televised game. So I hope we get some Brunson versus Luka. And then after that is Lakers Nuggets. Which is always a fun little back and forth because they were in the Western Conference Finals last year and these big nationally televised games against, you know, defending champions. That is when you see what you were talking about, where you see LeBron, the old LeBron who can rev it up for a game. And sometimes you see Anthony Davis. He could be the two-way star for a game, not every night. So I'm looking forward to both of those matchups. My ass is going to be parked on the couch all Thursday night watching TNT.
And I will probably be sitting in front of my computer slaving away, typing, because something's bound to happen on this trade deadline that we do not foresee as of yet, which is why we did this podcast this way today. That is all we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode, a trade deadline edition of No Cap Room, tomorrow. I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Monday. It is All-Star Week coming up, y'all. We're going to have some fun. Until then, everybody be safe.